And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 847. People are panicking. A little over 3 weeks into the season. Starting pitching is a disaster for almost everybody. We're going to talk about starting pitchers, the good, the bad, the ugly, what to do, what our thoughts are, because what to do is probably hold, unfortunately. But we'll see what to do there in order to help me break all of that down. As a friend of mine, a friend of the show, a pleasure to see him in Vegas, a pleasure to chat with him already. You can find him on Twitter at Dustin L. McComas. Dustin McComas, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm panicky too, Bubba. I'm the guy, if it's going haywire at the stock market, I'm throwing the things in the air. I'm panicking too. We were kind of talking before hopped on here. I'm having a pretty solid year overall, but if you have like two really important teams that are a higher price point, if one of those is in the dumpster, it just drags everything down. And my main event team ratios are just a complete dumpster fire. But I am curious though, do we need to hold a moment of silence? Because our guy Patrick Corbin's on the mound right now, and he's putting up some zeros. I don't want to jinx it, but I'm kind of surprised you're recording right now. I thought we'd have the candles up and the shrine going for our guy here who's putting up some zeros for the Blue Jays right now.
He's teetering right now. He's got an out. They just got runners on the corner with one out.
I see a lot of red popping up on the Savant game sheet.
The second you said that, I looked up and I'm like, yeah, we might have to hold off like that that one. But it's a good start so far.
Second time through the order is a little tricky, you know, tougher to navigate.
When you're a soft toss and lefty, you get lucky if it's one time. After that, you're playing with fire. So
yeah, exactly.
We'll see. But yeah, I echo the ratio comments, man. We talked about it off air. It's just been a weird, weird season. And I guess I'll ask you, because I saw you tweet about it. You mentioned it when we were talking before the show. Like, ABS is new to the major leagues. We've seen it in the minors, and some people like, oh, this high walk rate, it's attributed to the ABS for these minor league pitchers, so on and so forth. And we're kind of seeing it this year in a roundabout way. It could be a combination of high walk rate slash, hey, these guys got to come in the zone more.
Yeah.
Now they're getting hit more. It's like a combination of both. Like, what's your initial thoughts? Because I know you actually you do some scouting and some other stuff like that. So you might have a better feel on like maybe what a pitcher is going through with all of this.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, I was trying to dive through and see if there are any trends to kind of help explain like what we're kind of seeing ratio wise. And you know, Cody Stavenhagen from The Athletic published a story, really interesting read about, you know, the walk rate right now collectively league-wide is 9.9%. If that held, it'd be the highest since 1950. I went through and I know we always talk about hitter environments right now. When it's colder, it's not good for hitters, but it's also not good for gripping breaking balls. And you'll see pitchers talk about this sometimes. Brandon Woodruff, when he threw at Fenway last week or 2 weeks ago, it was really cold. And I don't think he threw a breaking ball until the fourth inning. And after the game, he's like, because of the weather, I couldn't pitch with my breaking stuff. So there's the element that the ball's not going to carry, but there's also the element of like guys kind of struggle to command, especially breaking stuff. So I went through and I looked, and you know, this time of the year, I went to 2022, 2023, 2024, 2025, and looked at the league-wide walk rate to this point. And it was 9%, 9.2, 9.1, 9.1. So elevated compared to where they ended at the end of the year, which was respectively 8.2, 8.6, 8.2, 8.4. That's a long way of saying that like we've seen for four straight years walk rates higher this time of the year, and then they lower as the year goes on, which kind of helps explain the weather warms up, guys are built up, they get a better feel for what's working, commanding the baseball, all that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't totally dismiss that this walk rate we're seeing right now is really high. And to me, one of the more interesting things is that the league-wide swing rate is down. And I think we're seeing some teams, I don't think every team is doing this. It might not even be a majority of teams, but I think some teams are doing this. I've told their guys, cut your swing rates. I was kind of looking through the Twins because I was debating. I have Royce Lewis on all my OCs, and I was like, do I keep him? Do I hold him? And he was one of the guys that just hasn't been swinging, and his walk rate has jumped. Trevor Larnach, I looked at him. He was doing the same thing. So I kind of looked at the Twins, who've scored a ton of runs recently. Like, are they collectively just like, dude, make these guys come in the zone? You know, we have ABS now. You guys know the strike zone really well. Make these guys come in the zone to you. Don't go chasing for things. I noticed it with the Astros some, who've been phenomenal on offense. Jose Altuve is a notorious hacker. I mean, that dude – he's in swing mode all the time. he's swinging way less. So I think what we're seeing right now is some hitters and some teams are purposely cutting their swing rates because of ABS, because they know we got to try to get these guys to come in the zone more. Like, you're not at your best when you're trying to hit these shadow zone pitches and chasing a little bit, as opposed to just trying to hit the strikes in the zone. Use that thing to your advantage. You know the strike zone. So it's something to follow. I don't think it's the sole reason why we're seeing the walk rate up and we're seeing some ratios blump and things like that. But I do think, you know, every guy's different. I do imagine there are some guys that this messes with a little bit. And maybe they're trying to be too fine and trying to really just purposely hit the very edge of that strike zone corner, as opposed to maybe missing a ball or two balls off the plate and trying to get those swings and misses.
That's a really good point. Like, I didn't even think about the selectiveness. I thought about it was more so the pitchers gripping the ball. Whenever we think of cold weather, we always think, oh, the home runs are down. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't talk enough about the other side, it feels like, and that makes a lot of sense as well. So it'll be interesting to see, because when we think things heat up, ball flies more, but now the pitchers also have more command of things. So it will be interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing how things continue to change, because these ratios can't be this way forever. And to be fair, like Monday, it was like home run derby. Tuesday, right, we had a little bit of home run derby. But as a whole, this week, if you avoided like those landmines, ratios have been better this week.
Yeah.
As things have heated up. So maybe I don't know. There's definitely something to keep an eye on. So we'll be watching out for that. A couple little recent news bits before we start talking some pitchers here. We'll start with a pitcher. Nick Pivetta left his last start with a shoulder or elbow inflammation, they said. Now it is a right elbow flexor strain. Mm-hmm. He's choosing rest and rehab for now. No timetable, no seriousness is given. They're saying it'll be weeks, if not months, before we see him again. Feels like a drop, Dustin.
Yeah, this is a tough one. This reminds me a lot of what Logan Gilbert went through last year around this exact same time. Is he had, I believe, a flexor strain too. And it was like, hey, we think it's going to be non-surgical, but it's going to take him a while to get back. So yeah, this is a really, really, really tough hold. Certainly in 12s, I think you've got to cut them loose and throw them back. 15s, maybe if you can wait a little bit just to see if there's any piece of news that comes out that kind of gives a more clear timetable of like, hey, this might be, hey, he's going to start playing catch again. We're going to see how it goes and that sort of thing. But even still, that's the history of these types of injuries are often not promising. And I feel like if the guys do even come back, are they the same guy when they come back, and how long does it take for them to come back? So I in 12s, I'd cut them loose. In 15s, if I could, if you haven't been hit by injuries and disasters and things like that, maybe hold a little bit just to see if there's any more pieces of news that come out that's, hey, he's going to start throwing again. You can say, okay, well, maybe if he's going to start throwing again, if all goes well, maybe he goes back out on a rehab pretty shortly after that. But yeah, it's certainly a really, really tough hold to make right now, because these things typically don't end well.
Yeah, and he was dealing with something kind of like related to this, it felt like, during spring. So this is not a great feeling. We'll have to definitely monitor that situation. A guy we talked about, the DMs, and you dig into pitchers. That's one of the major reasons we're talking today is pitchers. Noah Schultz made his major league debut on Tuesday, and it was kind of a mixed bag, is the best way I'll say it. Like, probably adrenaline going wild. Wouldn't fault him 1 second for that. But we got Noah Schultz throwing 4 1/3 innings, 4 runs, 3 earned, 3 hits, 4 walks, and 4 strikeouts. So, again, mixed bag of fun with Noah Schultz. What are your thoughts on Noah as he will potentially, looks like, get another start Sunday in Sacramento?
Yeah, he was kind of what I thought he would be. On paper, he had a pretty easy matchup, but Tampa made it difficult because I think they went into that and just said, hey, don't swing at spin. And if you look, like, they didn't really whiff at any of his breaking balls. And his slider is real. Like, it's a real, really good pitch. I think if he ends up staying up with the White Sox and throws, I don't know, majority of the season, I bet his slider rates as one of the better ones Major League Baseball. But Tampa was like, nah, we're not going to swing at any spin. We're going to make you throw fastballs in the zone and come to us. And eventually he started throwing more strikes and settled in. So he's really interesting. There's some swing and miss stuff there. The secondary stuff is strong. He's going to throw really hard. I don't know if the fastball is going to light up like the stuff models or anything like that, but he's going to have enough velocity. You know, big guy, 6'9", 6'10". Kind of a unique look in that he's not a big extension guy, even though he's really, really tall. He kind of cuts off at the end, which can kind of add to the spin and things like that. But to me, I find myself a tiny bit hesitant because he's probably going to command a very large fab bid in main events and 15-team leagues and things like that, unless he gets totally rocked his second start. Who was the guy a few years ago that it was a Seattle guy? It might have been, I don't know if it was Brian Wu. Somebody had a two-step and got hammered and then was amazing the rest of the season. Everybody got for cheap and fab. But I thought it was somebody in Seattle. With Schultz, he just doesn't have an extensive track record of throwing a lot of innings. And I went and looked through. He's only completed 6 innings once in his entire professional career. So part of that's just kind of the nature of pitching right now. But part of that's a guy that just hasn't thrown many innings as a pro. So I'm a little bit leery of not just the full season workload potential, because I think he threw like 80-ish innings or something like that. So if you're getting to like the 130, 140 innings, that'd blow through what he's done in the past. But I'm also a little worried about, is this a five and dive kind of a guy, both from a control and command standpoint? He's had some control issues in the past. It was much better this spring. It was much better in AAA thus far, very small sample size. So I'm going to watch him again on Sunday, assuming he gets that second start. But to me, this won't be a guy that I'm planning to blow the fab budget on, because I think there's just too many questions about the control and like the full season workload.
Pretty much agree on everything you said there, because I'm worried about the workload. I don't usually spend a ton of money on prospect pitchers anyways because of said workload. So, plus, like, it's just a different environment of getting things, the success rate. We talked about the walks in the minor leagues. Maybe it was before the show. I can't remember with the ABS. He had a high walk right there too. So it's like if you read any scouting report on Schultz, it's electric stuff. Command can be a problem. He showcased that in his first start.
As
to your point with the slider, it's like electric. It's amazing. But it's just how much can he command it to stay in the game? It could be interesting, and this is where I will definitely have some bids in on him, but nothing probably close enough to win anything with Noah Schultz, like the old keep him honest, the phrase everybody loves on that. But when I look at Noah Schultz and I look at the White Sox, like they have Grant Taylor, who they said is not going to start any game all season. That'd be a great piggyback situation, potentially. That could fit him into also stretch him out. They're using a piggyback for Anthony Kay on Thursday. So it's not something they're opposed to in Chicago. I think they realize that most of their rotation doesn't have long season, like innings capabilities here. So how can we stretch this out? That would be the only thing that keeps me interested in Schultz. If I knew he was starting every game, like you said, and you pray for 5 innings, that's when things get complicated.
Right. So, right.
Yeah. And that's where the bidding kind of is tough.
Yeah. And plus too, Shane Smith is lurking down in AAA. I can't imagine he's there very long. So when he comes up or comes back, I don't know how he would eventually factor into the mix as well, because they've got some guys, and we'll probably talk about one or two of them, but they got some guys throwing the ball well right now. There's like not anybody who's like really struggling for them. And they've been a pretty good pitching development team for a couple years now.
Yeah, it's a very good development team of late, surprisingly. And the Shane Smith thing, he had a rough first start on Wednesday at AAA, but I said it when he got sent down, is he's just there to get his mind right. It feels like it's really tough to believe that a guy that was their best pitcher last year, their opening day starter, it's not like, hey, go work on some things and figure it out, because they need those innings. He was the only guy with innings in that rotation, basically.
You're right. You're right.
He will be back at some point in time. Sticking with the White Sox, they called up Sam Antenacci, made his MLB debut on Wednesday, went 1-for-4, hit fifth, played second base, gave Chase Mydroth the day off. Mydroth's back in on Thursday. We got Antenacci hitting like ninth, playing left field in that game. He's playing both days. That's a plus. What are your thoughts on Sam Antenacci, as he will be another big fab target this weekend?
Yeah, he's really interesting. The power with him is the toughest thing to project, because I do think that he's going to be one of those guys that eventually it's not like a zero. You know, you kind of look at the projections right now. They're all at base, like if you did it for 600 plate appearances, like 10 or less home runs. I do think in time, and he hit 2 in AAA this year, in time he's going to hit a little bit more than that. But he kind of looks to me like a Sal Frelick type of a guy, which Sal Frelick's have value in our game. I always love the guys who have, you know, even or better walk to strikeout numbers throughout the levels. It's one of the reasons why I thought Kevin McGonigal was going to really hit from day one. You look at Antonacci, that's what he's done in the minor leagues. He's run a lot. So I think there's a chance here that you get some good, you get some batting average that could be a plus, maybe not a big plus, but a plus. You get some stolen bases. You get an opportunity for maybe he hits his way into a better spot in the lineup, kind of like what Medroth did last year because of the walk rates, because of the lower strikeout rates. The only question is going to be like, how much power are you going to get? So it's kind of like team dependent. Like, hey, if you need some speed, maybe take a chance on this guy. He's probably going to add outfield eligibility pretty quickly on, I'd think. But if you're somebody that's really hurting in power and you've got some of those speed guys already, might not be a good fit, but I like him. I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to get on base. I think he's going to steal bases. And I think eventually he's going to show a little bit more power than he had shown in the minor leagues up until this point, but it's not going to be something that really helps you right now power-wise.
Fully agree. I think maybe you get 8 home runs out of him, 10 this year, who knows. But speed's legit and the average is legit. And we talk about it a lot, like when you're prepping for a draft, to make sure you pay attention to your batting averages. That's like one of the few stats you can fix in season, especially as the season goes on. Right now, we're early, 3 weeks in. Like, this is a chance to, if you already see you got a problem here, and again, it's early, we shouldn't overreact to everything, but certain things you can kind of see where things are headed. That's one of them. And this could be a nice little fix to have there. Curious to see what he goes for, but he feels like he's one of the first guys that, at least me, who doesn't like to be too aggressive in FAB, this feels like a guy that I'd be like, okay, I could see spending a decent amount on because you should get a good return throughout the season, if that makes sense. So that's where my head is there. All right, let's get to it. Let's get to the starting pitching. And it's been panic mode, and a lot of it has been due to ratios, as we started out the show talking about. Strikeouts are still in play. For the most part, that's been fine. If you roster a Toronto Blue Jays, it's a question we'll have from the Discord later. You don't get wins. That's just reality, apparently.
Yeah, that's true.
And we have no control over that, unfortunately. We do have control over who starts sitting the others. But it's like, you know, different people think certain amount of innings or at-bats are valuable sample sizes. We're getting through about 4 starts now. Some guys are getting close to 5 starts. Like, I feel like it might not be the best sample size, but we have an idea of where things are headed. And obviously, when weather changes, like you mentioned earlier, we could see some changes there too. But I made a list of, I call it like the good and the bad, the ugly in theory, a true or false. Like, how do you ever want to go about this? But pitchers are off to good starts. And like, do we believe in these things? Because there's always a term, you know, some guys are going to regress to what? Positively, negatively. Mm-hmm. That's just the reality of the storm. Very few are going to go full Tariq Skubal and dominate the entire season. Just not going to happen. But where can they lift? And so that's where we're going to go on today's show. Let's kick it off with one of the guys that Bubba in the Blue, and Ryan and I talked about Jose Soriano a ton this offseason. Ryan loved him for his ground ball rate. I've always been a sucker for him because when he's not walking the farm, he has tons of strikeouts and upside. He's always just had control issues. This year, Jose Soriano looks like one of the best pitchers in baseball. Like, if you look at player raters, he is the best pitcher in baseball so far, which is crazy to think about. But Jose Soriano has made 4 starts this year. He's got 4 wins. That's the first, like, whoa. He's allowed 1 earned run in 27 innings pitched, 31 strikeouts to 9 walks, Dustin. Obviously, well, I'm going to say obviously, not sustainable to that extent, but could be pretty good, especially for the price you paid. So where are you at on a guy like Jose Soriano? Like, what are your thoughts of where, how far does the regression come? Like, how quote unquote lucky has he been, I guess?
Yeah, this one's painful for me because he was a guy I was bigging in on last year. And I really underestimated the impact that Mike Maddox was going to make in Anaheim. I thought that their issues were more along like the player development, research, R&D, like pitching lab, all that sort of stuff. Like, I just thought they were way behind there. And they might still be way behind there, but it's clear Mike Maddox is doing some good things in Anaheim. And Jose Soriano, like you said, he's going to regress. But I think a lot of what he's doing right now is real from the standpoint that I feel like if you've drafted him, you feel like you can feel pretty confident you've got a major breakout season on your hands, assuming health. And, you know, I think they did a really smart thing, which was a little it surprised me a little bit in that they basically just upped his four-seam fastball usage a lot. Even though that was the pitch that I think he struggles to command the most, you know, command from the standpoint of, you know, putting it where he wants to. He throws it for strikes, and that's the important thing here. He's throwing a lot more strikes, and I think the change in pitch usage has unlocked a much better strike rate for him. And I think you're seeing it in the fact that he's getting a lot more called strikes, because I think everybody's just kind of, whoa, wait a minute. You're throwing strikes like with a bunch of your pitches? We're not used to that. We're used to just letting you walk guys, and maybe you'll strike out six, but you might walk six as well, because that's just kind of who he was last year. But he's throwing a ton of strikes. His arm angle changed a little bit. But the overall like he always had stuff. That's never been the question. It's just the strike throwing ability in the command, and he's filling it up right now, and he's getting a bunch of whiffs. And yeah, there's going to be points where, you know, his barrel rate for his four seam fastball is not good right now. It's like 23%. It's really, really high. And he gives up a pretty fair amount of fly balls on there, but we can deal with Jose Soriano giving up a couple solo jacks in a game. What the problem was in the years past, it was a 3-run homer here, 4 walks in an inning here, and all of a sudden things just totally unraveled on him. So I think that what he's showing right now is very real. Yeah, the ERA is going to go up, but you mentioned the ground ball rate. He's always had that. And the fact that he's throwing as many strikes as he is right now, I think we've got a full-on breakout on our hands.
I fully agree. That's why there'll be some regression. He's not gonna be a 0.33 ERA, but even like rest of season, like projects the Bat X, who does factor in pitching now, 2.83, 3.55. Like, we could live with all of those numbers anywhere in that range.
Yeah,
totally fine. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of the situation. And you mentioned the ground balls. Last year had a career best 65%. He's up to 61 still this year. Totally mm-hmm. fine. So yeah, mm-hmm. the BABIP won't be as sustainable. He's gonna have those games. He will have at least one game where he gives up like 4 or 5 home runs. And you're just like, what? But that's Soriano in a nutshell. And you hit on that. So I'm with you. I think this is real. This is who he has been. He's just finally cut out the garbage in the middle.
Yes.
Come down. Yeah. To. And yeah. And that's what. Because I'm with you. I've been on him every year. Like you said, you're on him last year. I've on him every year. I end up dropping him when it feels like, okay, he still can't figure it out. He's finally got it for now. Subject to change. We've seen this before. But I feel like this is pretty darn legit. And like, we've seen it in Anaheim. I didn't put him on the list because we don't talk about everybody. Like, Reed Detmers, he did it again last night against the Yankees in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. Like, he's showing, and that's a guy I've loved forever too, and he's been frustrating. So some guys just take time to develop, and it helps. New pitching coach in Anaheim. That goes a long ways as well.
Very long way, yeah.
So. All right, Jeffrey Springs of the Sacramento Athletics. A lot of us liked him when he was with Tampa Bay. There's been injury concerns off and on. Heads over to Sacramento last year. It was kind of a depleted season. He threw 171 innings, which is great, but it was a 4.11 ERA. It was just kind of like, I didn't say go through the motions, but it didn't feel like Jeffrey Springs out there. Mm. They needed him to do what he did, but it wasn't the same. Started out this year now, 4 starts, 3-0 record, 4 earned runs over 24 2/3, 20 Ks to 8 walks. He's given up 2 earned runs over 12 1/3 in Sacramento. If people want to worry about the home road splits, that's against the Astros and the Rangers. So he's looked really good through 4 starts. What are your thoughts on Jeffrey Springs? Like I said, a guy 2 years ago, people were like all excited about minus the Sacramento aspect.
Yeah, I think to me, Jeffrey Springs looks healthy again. And I think we can see that in the way the fastball is playing. He's got better fastball shape right now. He's getting more ride on the pitch. I think the IVB is up like 2.5 inches, which is a massive, massive difference. You're talking about a guy that was probably like in the above average range to like the plus range now in terms of what the way the fastball is playing. And you can see it too. Like, guys just aren't really hitting it like they did last year. It got hit pretty hard last year. He had to lean on the changeup a lot. Now he's at the fastball playing well, and he still has that changeup. Also, the sliders being the factor as well. So, but to me, it's all about the fastball. And it just looks like the old Jeffrey Springs fastball that he had in Tampa when everybody was so excited about what he was doing there. So arm angle's up a little bit, vertical release height's up a little bit. And I think that's all playing into the fact that the fastball is just a much better pitch. And as long as it's performing like this with this shape, I think you can feel pretty good about what he's doing right now. You mentioned Sacramento. There's going to be some games where that home park and the fly balls and that sort of thing gets them. But I think that this is the first time I've watched him. I'm like, okay, this looks like the guy that was in Tampa that everybody was so fired up about as a breakout lefty. He kind of looks like that guy again. And I think maybe he's just healthy. He's just farther removed from the injury issues he's had in the past. And everything's just kind of playing the way it used to be in the past.
That's a great point about, you know, some guys, it takes a year or so to get past that injury. history. And I watched a lot of that game last night against Texas, and it did look like he was in control of what was going on out there. And he's following the game plan, which is all you can ask for most of the time. Cam Schlittler, this was one that even during draft season, I was like, I like this kid, especially at price, because he had almost a full season at the big league level, through 73 innings with the Yankees last year, 75, six in the minor. So fully stretched out. No concerns there. And we saw he was getting drafted around like the Burns, Miz, like all the young guns. He's going around them, you savage. But Schlittler actually had the experience, I guess, is what I'm looking for here. And he's come out looking real strong to start the season here. Four starts, 21 and two-thirds innings, six earned, 30 strikeouts, and more importantly, one walk. Like, seeing young pitchers with command like that goes a long, long ways in my confidence level. Maybe too long at times. So he's not giving up a home run either, which is pretty darn impressive. What's your take on Cam Schlittler? Because, again, he's still young, so we always expect – well, we usually expect youngsters to have hiccups. But where are you at on him?
Yeah, he's basically breaking the pitch models right now. I guess he's just been so unbelievably good. And, you know, one of the pluses to being a guy that can throw three different fastballs is I feel like that's the easiest pitch to throw for a strike. So – I think he's just got such great velocity and such good fastballs that he can just fill up the zone and just challenge guys. And right now, nobody can hit it. I mean, you look at just – I mean, having the swinging strike rate he has on a four-seam is just incredible. And then you throw the cutter in there, and then you've got a sinker in there, and then he'll drop in a curveball occasionally as well. But it's literally just like an old-school rock and fire, here's a fastball, try to hit it. It just happens to be one of the best fastballs in baseball. And oh, by the way, he can cut it and he can sink it as well. So yeah, this looks like a full on, you know, if you were gung ho about Cam Schlittler, you've got to be thrilled right now, because this looks for real. And he was, like you said, he was kind of in that bucket of like, I can't remember who I told on a podcast in the offseason. I was like, there's this bucket of all those guys and he's in it. And it's like, and if you pick the right one, you're going to probably win or put yourself in a position to win your league. And he looks like the one from that group, although Chase Burns was throwing really well today. Jacob Mizorowski's throwing really well as well. So there could be multiple guys that come out from that group. And that's one of the reasons, Nolan McClain, although he ended up being higher than those guys in ADP, that's one of the reasons why we were so excited about these guys. But no, it looks real. The arm angle's up a little bit. That's helped the fastball shape even more. I mean, I just kind of laugh when I look at the stats, because it's just been so dominant. And he's not going to be that dominant all year, but there's a chance that this guy is like, if he gets the workload, he might end up being a Cy Young conversation.
That'd be awesome. And it'd be much needed, because I make the running joke a lot. Whenever we talk about Luis Eel, goes from rookie of the year to can barely get a spot in rotation. Schlittler didn't win the rookie of the year, obviously, but could run away with the could be the future of this team when they're getting Rodon back in about a month and Garrett
Cole's going to rehab soon.
This Yankees team, like, offense has been inconsistent, but they're about to get some massive reinforcements in that rotation. You know who else I just thought of it? Who else throws three fastballs? He didn't have a great last start, but he's pretty good. Garrett Crochet. So maybe there's a lot to be said about that situation. And there's one time a guy near and dear to my heart, because talk about a guy that just kind of let himself go towards the end of his career. Lance Lynn was a great three fastball pitcher as well.
Oh, yeah, he was before his time. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Talk about pitchers that it's like the old from the movie Hook, if anybody remembers. Like, I see you, Peter. Taj Bradley, I see you, Taj. Like, you're finally doing what we've prayed for years when you were with Tampa Bay. Like, the skills were always, we always said, really, really good. The production, not so much. And a lot of it was command issues with Taj. He's either walking guys, giving up the long ball, or both at times. Taj goes to Minnesota at the trade deadline last year. Didn't really get in the rotation much. He starts the rotation this year. Four starts, 21 and two-thirds innings for Taj Bradley. Three earned runs, but more importantly, 29 strikeouts to eight walks for a 22.6% K to walk. This, like I said, this is the guy a lot of us have wanted to see for a long time. How sustainable do you think this is, though?
Yeah, this will be the one the first one I pour some cold water on. I'm a little scary of where this might head once the weather warms up, because he's giving up a lot of fly balls. I think his ground ball rate is 35.2% right now. And he's yet to give up a home run. And I'm afraid that once things heat up, once teams kind of see him, get the book and all that sort of stuff. Although his pitch mixes and things like that haven't really changed. I think his stuff is up. I think the splitter is a part of that. I think he stole Simeon Woods Richardson's splitter and he's got it now. And I don't know where Simeon Woods Richardson's splitter went. I have no idea. So he's got that working for him, but I'm just a little afraid that a guy with suspect command who gives up a ton of fly balls and he's given up some pretty hard contact right now. I'm afraid that there's going to be a home run barrage in his future. So it's one of those things like you just keep riding it until the wheels fall off, I think, because he's just been so good so far and striking out a ton of guys. But I would just pay close attention to see, does that ground ball rate change and the quality of contact he's giving up, does that change as well? Because I'm a little afraid that the ball is going to start flying out of the park against him sooner than later.
Yep, that's like when I entered him, his problem has been the long ball at times, the command and long ball, and that does not play there. Ask Bailey Ober on how that goes in the summertime in Minnesota. Parker Messick, he's a part of the lefty duo, that the young guns in Cleveland, Messick and Cantillo, but Messick has been really good. A guy that there was whispers last season, like, just give Messick a chance. He'd have spot starts and look good and never really got the run. He's more of, again, spot starter, but this year through three starts, one earned run on a solo shot through 17 and two-thirds innings, 16 walks to five strikeouts. Been very, very effective, Dustin. Are we a believer in Parker Messick?
Yeah, I am. And he's a joy to watch. He's a fun guy to roster because it's just really fun to watch him pitch because he's just like very competitive and it's not like big fastballs and big stuff, although his changeup is just a phenomenal pitch and it's great to have one like that because you can neutralize the opposite handed hitters. But he just pitches with such like, he just pitches with big balls. Really. It's just fun to watch. And I'm a believer. He's got a little kind of like funky lefty to him. You know, you'd think guys would hit the fastball better than they should, but they don't. I mentioned the changeup. He's got the sinker. Like he knows how to pitch. He's got some moxie. He can throw different pitches in different counts. So I'm definitely a believer in him. And I think those people that bet on him during the offseason as being the guy that's going to emerge in there when they're kind of having that, you know, battle between Logan Allen and some other guys as well. We all were confident that Cantillo and Messick would be the cream that rises to the top. Yeah. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. And I think what Messick's doing right now is sustainable. And I think he's going to be a solid guy throughout the year. Who's probably going to give you a lot of innings and in a good park to have him.
Yeah, I have a decent amount of Cantillo. Messick was a few and far between. And it goes back, like you said, people were debating who between them and Logan Allen. You know, when we're drafting early like we like to do, maybe you just remember, like I need to remember, just take the talent and figure out the rest later. Yes. We all know Logan Allen isn't good. Like why were we even debating that? We debated it because the beat reporter said it was an option. We shouldn't have debated it in reality on draft day. That's the lesson learned so far, folks. Another lesson learned, we've kind of said this with like a lot of these guys are young guys that have not like lived up to the hype and are. Emerson Hancock meets the mold. Once like one of the top pitching prospects for the Seattle Mariners, and it's weird to say when you have Logan Gilbert and Brian Wu, who eventually surpassed them, obviously, and George Kirby and company, but Hancock was in that conversation at one point in time, and every time he come to the big leagues, he'd find the banana peel. And it was like O'Doyle rules all over Hancock's success. His fastball was garbage. He was getting hit all over the yard. Home run derby, bad deal. Fastball looks great this year. Mm-hmm. He's limiting damage. He's been very, very effective. Shut down the Padres on Wednesday night. So where are we at here on Emerson Hancock, who, again, looking much better, walks her down. Like everything you want to see, he's just flipped the script this year.
Yeah, I think Seattle fixed him. They lowered the arm angle. They lowered the vertical release point, and it's really helped the way the fastball, the four-seam fastball plays. He's getting swinging strikes with it. He's getting weak fly balls with it. It's got some better shape to it. And he always had the ability to miss some bats with the secondary stuff. Even last year, his slider, his sweeper, those would collect some whiffs. Looks like it's just kind of sweeper cutter now, which I think is kind of better fitting what he does, maybe better able to command it. He's getting a lot of called strikes with the cutter. But I think this is just a great example of Seattle finally figuring out, hey, what do we need to do to get the most out of this guy? And can he do it? You know, there's sometimes you can look at a guy and you know, maybe there's so many limits to what he can do from the Arsenal standpoint. Like some guys, I was watching the Jeff Passan deal with Paul Skeens and Tarek Skubal the other day, and Skubal was like, I can't throw a sweeper. I've been trying for 6 years. I can't do it. And that's a great example of like some guys, supinators, pronators, whatever, arm angle, like they just can't throw certain pitches. And Seattle, credit to them, they figured out, okay, we can lower his arm angle a little bit. We can lower the release side a little bit. We can get the fastball to play better. It's going to fit the rest of his arsenal. So I think that this, you know, I know some people have mentioned when Bryce Miller comes back, it doesn't matter if Emerson Hancock's throwing like this. They'll figure it out. Emerson Hancock's not leaving the rotation pitching like this. And while I don't think he's going to sustain the ratios he has right now all season, I do think that he is like where you draft them in the leagues going to be a slam dunk value. Because we know pitching in that park is just such a great, great park to pitch in. Good defense behind him, good team context. And he's getting swinging strikes right now as well. He should have had a win last night, if not for the Padres having another ridiculous comeback in the final inning. So, yeah, this looks like Seattle fixed him. And it's another one of Seattle's kind of projects on the pitching side that they figured something out, and it's working.
It's definitely working. And the Skubal Skeens thing was great when they were talking about like Skeens all. My first one went to the parking lot. You just got to keep throwing it. And but they're also talking about how at least Skubal did for sure. I don't know if Skeens did, but Skubal flat out just kept going like, I see new grips on like Instagram and I try them immediately. That's the first thing I do when I go to the ballpark. Like, the best pitcher in baseball is still trying to tweak things. So to your point with Hancock, they kept tweaking and I think they finally figured it out essentially is what it came down to.
Yeah.
For now. And we'll see where it goes. Let's go from very young to old. And we'll go to Steven Matz, who's grinding against the White Sox right now, one run through three innings. But I brought him up just for the fact that, you know, a lot of these guys are rostered. Matz might actually be on the wire for some this week. And he's locked into this Rays rotation at the moment. And coming into today, it was seven earned runs over 16 innings. Not like the greatest ratios, but 17 Ks is one of the big things I was looking at. Five walks. And Matz has been serviceable throughout his career in fantasy. So, again, I'm not looking for this guy to reinvent the wheel. But if we're looking for Fab this week, and like this is a guy that, again, a race team needs innings, Matz could be in play if you think what he's done so far is at least somewhat sustainable.
Yeah, and he had some success last year in kind of the relief role. And, you know, once Tampa signed him and they said, hey, we want to try him as a starter, my ears kind of perked up because, I mean, it's Tampa. They know what they're doing. And I think that they didn't really change much, but they did change one thing. And I think it's the slider is different. It's slower. It's got a different shape to it. And the swinging strike rate has exploded on it. It was like at 11% last year. Before this started, it was at 22% this year. So everything else is kind of similar. He's always had the change up. He's always been a sinker guy that gets pretty weak contact in that regard. He's always kind of had a curveball in his back pocket that he can use to get some college strikes with and land in fastball counts. But the slider to me has been a difference maker. He's thrown it a little bit more as kind of a strikeout pitch. And, you know, we know health has always been kind of the concern with him, but like the price point to draft him or if he's on the wire, I would absolutely have a lot of interest in Steven Matz, especially now that the Trop is a home park again for the Rays. Great park to pitch in. He's going to have a great defense behind him. Tampa's one of the best pitching organizations when it comes to development. So, the slider change was the big deal. And I think that's unlocked some more swinging strikes for him in a new level of success.
Randy Vasquez, a guy that his first three starts, outstanding. Two earned runs over 17 and two-thirds with 19 strikeouts. On Tuesday night, four runs over four innings, but he had the four walks to go with the 8K. So the walks, obviously, that'll make things get real rough for him. He still has an ERA of 2.49. He still has 25 Ks to eight walks over 21 and a third or two-thirds. He's improved in massive ways throughout this season, but in his career, it's been bad. Like, is this a reasonable improvement, do you think? Because a lot of people are quite excited from what they've seen.
Yeah, I mean, last year, it's just at the very, very end of the year, the fastball velocity went up. And he came into spring, and he still had it, and he still has it right now. And I think as long as he has that, I think that he's going to be a viable guy that's I don't think he's ever going to be like a lock and load, lead him in the lineup kind of a guy, even in 15s. But I do think he's going to be a guy that you can stream throughout the year, especially in Petco. So Yeah, he. If you kind of look at some of the under the hood stuff, you know, he was always a peculiar guy because in years past, you look at things like the body RA and things like that, and they're like, huh, this isn't. This says that he should be a solid kind of a back end rotation kind of a guy, and we just never saw it until the fastball velocity went up. So as long as he has that, I think you're, you know, maybe like a high threes, low fours ERA kind of a guy. I think he'll throw strikes at a decent enough rate for a whip to not really kill you. So I think he could be a solid streamer throughout the year. I don't think he's going to be like a full-on breakout kind of a guy that misses a ton of bats like he did in these first few starts. But, you know, I think I just kind of looking through, I don't know, like a, you know, 7.5 K per nine, solid ratios, team streamer kind of a guy. There could be some value with him throughout the year, as long as he keeps throwing hard.
Yeah, I fully agree. Like some people are claiming, oh, he's fixed. He's doing like, yeah, I want to see a lot more from Randy Vasquez before I believe that. Like, because we've seen the show for a decent sample size with him to know, like, I need to see some changes. A lot of these early pitchers are young. I can see changes happening. The elder statesman, I feel like I kind of know who we're getting for the most part. And yes, he's improved. Not going to deny that. But to just trust him every start, I'm not there right now. Same with this guy, Eduardo Rodriguez, who I love year in and year out, but I've been steadfast in not drafting him in recent years because, as Toby, one of my old former co-hosts, used to tell me, you must love 1.4 whips, Bubba. Because that's what E-Rod was great for. And Toby's a very smart person. So that's been ingrained in my head, if you can't tell by now. And I just stay away. But then he does this, Dustin. Before allowing 4 earned runs on Tuesday to Baltimore over 5 innings pitch, again, 4 walks, trend there. His previous 3 starts, he had thrown 18 innings, allowed 1 earned run with 11 strikeouts. Again, not a lot of strikeouts. The walks are kind of what they are. He's limited the damage. I say limited, Dustin, because I still don't believe this.
Yeah, I don't either. And I was kind of watching parts of that start he had yesterday, and it was kind of like dancing through raindrops. Like, I can't believe that Baltimore just hasn't absolutely blown this game wide open. I don't even think he had – at one point he had like 1 whiff through like the first 4 innings or 5 innings or something like that. So, yeah, they made some minor tweaks. You know, his arm angle changed a little bit. I think the fastball is a little bit different, but I don't know. He's just a guy that's like got to get a bunch of success with the changeup, and there's not really much else in the repertoire. So I feel like eventually he's going to balloon back to that bad ERA, bad whip kind of a guy that like Arizona trots out there all the time because he eats innings. I just don't really see – I don't really see any upside here, and I think he's just a guy that's just way over his skis right now.
Full agree on that one. I wouldn't be – like, there's a point this year if things go real south for Arizona, like, he's either traded or DFA'd. I wouldn't be shocked. Like,
yeah, I wouldn't be shocked either.
All right, let's go back to the young arms here, a guy that I get heckled for all the time by a co-host of mine named Ryan Bloomfield. I'm a big Bryce Elder fan, especially in DCs. He was like post 500. Like, it was just, it was kind of goes back to the conversation we had about Messick and Cantillo about who's going to get the rotation spot. And I'm just like, okay, I know people don't love Elder, but I think he's better than the other options. So that's where I'm going. Is this sustainable? I don't know, but he's gone 23 and a third innings, allowing 2 earned runs, 1 homer, 7 walks, 23 Ks. Like, do I think he's going to have a 0.77 ERA? Not a chance. I think he can still be pretty good. I do. But I want to hear your thoughts on Bryce Elder.
Yeah, you know, I had the pleasure of covering Bryce in college when I was a reporter covering the University of Texas, and he was there. Awesome guy, fascinating story. Was like very, very, very lightly recruited because he's like a 3-sport guy from a small school, played golf a lot. I think he was going to go to New Mexico State. Texas called him last minute and took him and showed up and was like one of the best starters they've had in recent memory. Great makeup. I think that, you know, I think that he was a little unlucky last year, and I think it just gave people a reason to say, oh, you know, this is the Bryce Elder we thought it was going to be. He kind of looked under the hood. I was like, nah, his ERA probably should have been closer to 4. He throws a lot of strikes. Not going to help you in strikeouts, but also not going to hurt you either. I think he gets enough to where you can stomach it, and he can pitch. He's a guy that I think is a good example of some of the models aren't going to catch what he does because he can create really steep angles with his sinker and his slider. And when he's commanding those, which I think he's got pretty good command, It's just like those things play off each other in a way that just can kind of like get weak contact or get swinging strikes or guys just missing pitches. So I don't really think they've done anything like dramatically different with him. I just think that he was better last year than his numbers. And I think that he could probably be a guy that's, I don't know, upper threes, low fours ERA, like whip's not going to hurt you. Like Atlanta needs him to throw a lot of innings. And yes, I think they're going to win a decent amount of games this year. So could get you some wins because he can pitch deep in the games. He's proven that. Like, hey, he'll stay out there all nine innings if you want him to and do it no problem. So I like Bryce Elder. I think that this is a guy like I would love to have him on my main event team right now compared to some of the trash I've been rolling out there this year. So I don't know if he's going to be as good as he's been from the jump so far, but I think the guy that we've seen in the past, you know, when he kind of had that breakout year, he had a 3.81 ERA with a K per nine that was a little under seven. I actually think he's going to be closer to like 7.5 K per nine this year, maybe even 8. And kind of give you that similar type of ERA and whip this year, which is a valuable guy, especially in 15 team leagues.
Well, we're going to wrap up the show on that high note. No, I'm just kidding. I agree. And you said a lot, like, I don't think he's going to have like an elite, like, but a 4 ERA I'll take all day long. Like, especially what you got him on the waiver wire potentially this year.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like we're good in my mind. So yeah, I'm there. I'm going to ask you two more on the good side, then we'll flip to the bad side. Foster Griffin, this is one, is because it's kind of we didn't know what we're expecting. He's coming over from the MPB. He gave up 4 runs and 5 1/3 on Thursday as we're recording his game. He left the mound, but 1 walk to 7 Ks, like you can see something there. But before today, it was 15 1/3, 3 earned runs, 6 walks, 12 Ks. So the walks to strikeout ratio, not perfect, but we saw a guy that even after today's start still has a 3.05 ERA. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I still don't know what to expect. Whenever these guys come over from Korea or Japan, I'm always like, yeah, it's such a different game. And I know I'm not alone in those thoughts. But now we've seen 4 starts for today with 3 coming into today. Anything stand out to you with Foster Griffin besides playing on a bad team?
You know, it's a really deep arsenal. And he's got command of it. I think he's got enough to, like, potentially turn over a lineup a couple of times. I know he didn't today. I think he had 4 scoreless, and then Ozuna got him for a barrel, and I think O'Neill Cruz hit a rocket to the right field wall. Things kind of unraveled there from a little bit. But deep arsenal, he's got feel for it. That should help him kind of keep the splits in check, I'd think. It's kind of curious to me. He came out gangbusters early in the year, and like I was kind of surprised because I was looking at all the stuff models, and it was like, you know, 4 good pitches across the board. And those have kind of backed up a little bit now that there's been more data. But to me, probably a guy that's just like a streamer that you're going to stream in and out. If you drafted on DCs, like I did on several, I think you feel pretty good because you probably got him at like 500 or something like that. And I do think Washington, it hasn't always bared out in the results on the surface yet. I do think they're doing some fairly decent things on the development side, and it just hasn't really shown yet. And I wonder if as the year goes on, we'll see those guys kind of capture some of that skill that they're gaining a little bit more in terms of the stats. So probably just a streamer guy in 15s throughout the year. Going to throw strikes, I think, in command, can probably get into deep in the games. This would be a guy that if he were on like the Padres, you'd feel great about because it's like, okay, I can probably get some wins out of this. On the Nationals, is going to be pretty tough. Although I say that, he's already got 2 wins this season.
The Nationals have a sneaky offense. Young team.
They do.
They're going to grind and grind and grind. So yeah. We'll see how that one goes. Last on the good side I have here, you mentioned earlier with Noah Schultz, we'll talk about a teammate or two. Let's talk about this one. Davis Martin. It's a name that a few years back, everyone's like, okay, he's going to be up soon. It's never really panned out at the big league level, either in the rotation or the bullpen. This year, back in the rotation, he's thrown 18 innings over his first 3 starts, 5 earned runs, but 4 walks and 15 Ks. Looks a bit different. A lot of fly balls still. Does concern me a ton. Where are we at on Davis Martin? Because like I feel like the regression might hurt some days.
Yeah, you mentioned it with the fly balls. You know, gets a bunch on the cutter, gets a bunch on the changeup. You know, that's – I think at some point it's probably going to be – you're going to have some of those starts where – the gopher ball is a problem, and you're going to have some other starts where he just commands it well enough to where those fly balls don't leave the park. Interesting thing to me is like he's got a really deep arsenal, and he's kind of spreading out even more than he did last year. I think that's helping him. You kind of look at the CSW percentages, and he's got 1, 2, 3 pitches over 30%. So he can get some whiffs with different pitches. He can get some called strikes with different pitches. He's got different ways he can attack guys. And he's had some success in the past. So he's not going to ever like light up the models that you see on Fangraphs and things like that, that kind of scream, hey, come get me, a breakout's coming. But I think if you watch him pitch, you look at the command and the deep arsenal, there's some interest there. He's not like Bryce Elder, but I think from like a ratios production standpoint, it might be pretty similar to that in terms of what you could expect potentially.
That's good. No, I don't mind that. If you like Bryce Elder, will always get my attention. let's go to the bad side here. And obviously we're not going to hit on all the pitchers people are curious about. We'll try to get to most of them, but Brandon Sproat is a very interesting one. When he got traded from the Mets in the Freddie Peralta deal, everyone was all excited. Like, hey, he's got a chance to pitch. Good young arm. Not disagreeing with any of those thoughts. It's been a slow go. It was a slow go when he got his cup of coffee with the Mets last year as well. Mm-hmm. Overall, 2025 wasn't like what we saw in previous minor league seasons. But again, young arm. Dude's 25. On Thursday against the Jays, 6 2/3, 1 earned run, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. By far, the best start of the season. Because he entered Thursday 10 1/3 innings over 3 starts, 12 earned runs, 10 walks, and 10 Ks. On my Monday Fab recap with Ben, we talked about the most dropped players. Sproat's been a massive drop recently. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's back on the wire. People are going to see this start, get very excited. My question, should they get very excited?
It's a great question. I kind of was peeking at that game early on, watching left-handed God Patrick Corbin pitch.
He survived. Milwaukee. Didn't get destroyed.
He survived, baby. He survived. That's all you need.
Most rostered DC starter.
That's all you need. just survive. Just keep surviving. And it looks like Sproat was more of a four-seamer guy today than a sinker guy. And I think that can help him. You know, people forget he was acquired. I mean, last minute before the season started. So I don't think the Milwaukee pitching lab has fully gotten all their hands and crafted him in the way they want to craft him. So I wonder if this is a little bit of a notable shift in terms of the four-seam usage. I mean, he throws hard. I mean, he averages 97 miles an hour at that pitch. I mean, he got some whiffs today. He got some called strikes today. This is one that I'm definitely pretty interested to see how this goes. I had a lot of interest in him on main event draft day, didn't get him. He was part of that group of guys going in like the, I don't know, like the 300 to 350 kind of range, where it's like a long list of potential breakout kind of the guys there. And I liked him as a potential guy. Didn't get him. Of course, he, like you mentioned, was awful to start the year. But I wonder if they might have found a little something with changing the pitch mix a little bit today. I'm really curious to go back through and look at that. Because he throws really hard. He's got reputation as a prospect. He's got a deep arsenal. And Milwaukee is like at the top of like the pitcher organizations right now that I trust.
Yep. Full agree. Like, let them work with, there's a handful of teams we always talk about that we trust. Milwaukee's done magic. Like, let's not forget Quinn Priester. Yeah, he's hurt, but that dude was going, he was thrown away by the Pirates and the Red Sox. And now he's like, he was going to be an all-star pitcher almost. Like, let's just see what Sproat can do on that one. 1000% with you. Mike Burrows was one of the most popular quote unquote sleeper targets late in drafts during draft season. And it's been a mixed bag. Two of his starts against Seattle and the Angels, 11 2/3, 11 earned runs, 3 walks, 9 Ks. His other 2 starts at home against Boston and then in Coors Field even, 10 1/3, 5 earned runs, 4 walks, 9 Ks. So on the season, overall, not great. But we've seen a little good. We've seen a lot of bad. Where are you sitting on Mike Burrows right now? Because I just mentioned how Sproat was dropped everywhere. Yeah. Burrows has been dropped and might be dropped even more this week.
Yeah, he's a really tough one to figure out. I had a lot of interest in him in DC season, and then the price just got to a point later on. I was like, I can't follow it all the way up there. And I thought that he was really finding his groove in Pittsburgh at the end of the year. He started to throw harder. They kind of tweaked some things with the pitch mix, and it was like, man, this guy is destined for a breakout next year. He gets traded to Houston. Houston talked about throwing the sinker more, which they have, but his arm angle has changed a lot. And I consider Houston to be one of the best pitching organizations in baseball. They're really good at optimizing repertoires, arsenals, pitch usage, how to attack guys, all that sort of stuff. So if they did that, to me, I guess there was a reason they did do that. It hasn't really played out in the results so far, but I suspect that this is more bad luck than it is just bad pitcher. Part of that is the command. His command, he missed. I feel like every fastball he missed within Seattle ended up getting pummeled by somebody. And that's what good hitters do. Like, you throw a guy middle fastball when you shouldn't, chances are they're going to barrel that sucker and it's going to fly. So he's got to clean that up. But if you kind of look at some of the stuff under the hood, and I'm a big fan of Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard, just because it presents some different stats. That's not, yeah, it's all there. It's a different stats that public sites like Fangraphs and stuff like that don't see. And his batted ball data, like his PFIP and his PFIP for EV, which is like FIPs, but there ain't Chamberlain's FIPs in this formulism. The EV is exit velocity, 3.28 and 3.36. So it seems like there's been some bad luck in there based on the batted ball data so far. So I'm definitely willing to stick with him. And Houston needs him. They don't have anybody right now. They need every healthy body in that rotation. Eating innings, he kind of had to wear it a little bit in Seattle just because they needed a guy to throw innings for them. So I'm optimistic. He's getting whiffs of the changeup. He's getting whiffs of the slider. He's getting whiffs of the curveball. If the fastball command can get better, and maybe that's just throwing the sinker more often than the four-seamer, I think there's a chance that he ends up being the guy that everybody thought he could be entering this year.
That's good to hear. Like, maybe it's just one of those don't drop, but maybe let him throw a few starts on your
bench. Yeah, put him on the bench. Yeah, right. And it was hard this week. He had the two-step. I mean, yep. Anytime you're going into Seattle, you had to start him. But yeah, maybe if you want to bench him for a couple weeks and just take a look, I think that's totally fine. But I certainly in 15s, I would not cut him loose. In 12s, I get it. You kind of have to be a little bit more cutthroat right now. There's a lot of things on the wire. I would follow this one to see if things correct pretty quick and he becomes a guy again.
Yeah, and to echo Dustin's comment there, 12s, you'll find stuff. 15s, the wire looks horrific.
It's bad.
Starting pitcher with
it's really bad.
Like, yeah, it's a nightmare. So that brings me to Tanner Bibee.
Nice segue. You're a pro, yeah. Bubba. You're a pro.
2 years ago, we thought he was like the next best ace to Cleveland. Not so fast, my friend. Last year, like, he survived, is what I'll call it, throughout the season. This year, it's bad, Dustin. He's only gone 5 innings once in 3 starts. He's allowed 13 runs and 18 and a third, 4 homers, 6 walks, 18 Ks. If you take away the first start, it's been 11 Ks over those 13 and a third innings. So it's he's not even getting you a K an inning. And I ask this because, like, we know who Tanner Bibee is, and like we think we do. He might be transitioning to something else. Is he rosterable is the question. I know we just said in 15s it's hard to find pitching, so probably. But he's really doing nothing for you for fantasy.
It's tough. And he's doing the thing that we wanted him to do, was to keep throwing the cutter a lot, which is, you know, and he had that great September to end last year. He was good in the playoffs. And that seemed to kind of unlock everything for him. And he's actually getting a pretty decent amount of whiffs. Like, cutter's getting whiffs. Sinker's even getting some whiffs. Changeup's getting whiffs. Sweeper's getting whiffs. So he is missing some bats. The arm angle is also up as well. He had that little bit of a health scare. Was that his first start in Seattle? I think he left the game. They said it was like shoulder fatigue or something like that. I wonder if that's playing into this a little bit, but the velocity is in line where it's been in the past. He's getting a lot of fly balls and hard fly balls. So I think that this is kind of a command thing right now, and it's just a situation where the ball is flying out the yard against him, and until that command improves, I don't really see a path forward to like him being a guy that you can feel confident with starting right now. Like, I wouldn't cut him in 15s just because, like we talked about, the wire's garbage. He's got a long track record of being a better pitcher than this. 12s, I would probably definitely recommend benching him, at least until he kind of shows you some better command moving forward. But a lot of this stuff under the hood looks okay. It's just he's giving up a lot of hard fly balls right now. And the home run rate, what is he at? He's at 21% per fly ball, which is 10% higher than his career norm. So I suspect that that's going to come back down. The 370 BABIP's got to come back down, but come back down to where, I think, is the question we're asking. And I think you need to probably put him on the bench until he shows you he can kind of pull himself out of this. But I wouldn't cut him, certainly in 15s. And 12s, if you're loaded on the mound and you don't want to deal with it anymore, maybe. But, like, he's doing a lot of the things we wanted him to do heading into this year.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to ask the question, because it's like he's a name where people know the name. So it's yeah. At this time of the year, it's harder to pull the trigger on those cuts right now. Mm-hmm. Or if it's one of these kind of young guns, like, okay, hits a flash, whatever, flash in the pan thing. Tanner Bibee is one that people have trusted for 4 years now. And it's just like, what are we going to do? How's that going to
play out? So,
speaking of that, also, Luis Castillo is another guy that we've trusted for, feels like a decade. It probably hasn't been that long, but it's been a long time. And it's gotten rough. The first start was great. 6 shutout innings, 7 runs versus the Yankees. You're like, wow, look at this old man go. And I say old man, he's 33. But the last two starts, he's gone 3 2/3 and 3 1/3. Hasn't even gone through 4 innings. He's allowed 11 runs, 10 earned over those starts with 2 walks and 7 whole strikeouts against Houston and the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Dustin, has Father Time caught up with Luis Castillo?
That's a good question. I don't know. He's another one that's tough to figure out. I've always, like, looked at his surface stats each year, and I'm like, I don't know how he keeps doing this, because you kind of look under the hood, and it's like every year it kind of gets a little bit worse. And you're like, well, it's not showing up in the ERA and everything else. The strikeout rate, yeah, it's showing up, but, like, the ratios and stuff like that. And the home run splits have been well documented with him. But you kind of look, and it's like there's not really – a whole lot that's much different than a year's past. The arm angle's up a little bit. He's actually getting more swinging strikes than he did last year. I don't think the batted ball profile has really changed that much, but it's been ugly on the surface. So I think it's probably going to correct more to where it's been in the past. 429 BABIP right now. I think that's kind of getting him a little bit. 57.5% left on base percentage. You look at the XFIP, 365, FIP, 316. It's a good 3.65 Sierra right now. He's actually striking out more guys than he has the last 2 years. So I think that this is kind of an early season bad luck command kind of a deal. I think he's got a chance to pitch himself out of that. It's kind of interesting. He's got the best pitching plus he's had since 2020. So a lot of things underneath are like, hey, this guy should be dominating. Like, he hasn't thrown since, you know, the COVID year. And we're just not seeing that on the surface. I think that there's a chance he pulls himself out of it and things kind of correct themselves here once the BABIP and the left on base percentage kind of stabilize a little bit. But those could also be just factors of just not committing the baseball well enough right now.
True. And just remember, everybody that's listening, that we are discussing small samples, and we're trying
to three starts.
We're trying to grasp through the straws and try to see if there's stuff wrong. So that's why when Dust is digging down deeper onto certain things, it's like there's room for optimism. It's really hard to, I usually try to say, like, May 1st is when I really want to start making tough decisions. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you don't have time to wait, especially
it's tough. With pitchers
and our ratios are getting destroyed. All right, Cade Cavalli, speaking about ratios getting destroyed, he coming off an inning and a third, 4 in runs against the Pittsburgh Pirates, who, to be fair, much better this season. But when you look at Cade Cavalli, one of the most popular young options that came up in the draft season, he's only gone over 5 innings once this year. Mm-hmm. Still 8 in runs, 15 2/3, but it's 12 walks, 13 Ks. The pitch count has gone through the roof every start. What are you seeing when you look at Cade Cavalli?
Yeah, it just hasn't quite been what I thought it was going to be to this point. Just not quite getting the same number of swinging strikes. Just the batted ball quality he's giving up right now is kind of concerning. It's tough to really hang your hat on anything he's doing. The stuff underneath is really concerning. You know, I think the one plus with the way he ended the year last year was the strike throwing was pretty good. The walk rate was tolerable. And he only had a home run issue in like one game. I think there's a game in Yankee Stadium where he gave up like 4 homers. And that was like all the homers he gave up the entire year. And right now the walk rate is just really, really, really concerning. He looks like a guy that's like, okay, well, this is a guy that's had a pretty checkered injury past. maybe not doesn't quite have the reps and the command that we maybe hoped that he had in this year. So there is not really anything to hang your hat on here, and he hasn't even allowed a home run yet this year. So that's definitely a guy I would have thrown back to the bin in 12s already. 15s, you've got to put him on the bench and hope he kind of regains the form that you thought he might have heading into the year, because when you've got the walk rate he has right now, and he hasn't even really gotten hurt yet by the home run ball or even really an insanely bad BABIP, that suggests that the worst might not yet be behind us.
Yeah, that's definitely less than ideal on the Cade Cavalli front, because a lot of people are highly invested in Mr. Cavalli.
For good reason, yeah.
I was highly invested in Shane Boz, and I'm not like out by any means. It's been three starts, at least five innings in each start, three earned runs or less than two out of three. It's been eight runs over 16 innings, so you don't want to see that. 13 strikeouts to five walks. I thought there'd be a little more strikeout upside with Shane Boz, but to me, I'm sitting pretty I'm fine with what's taking place compared to everything else we've talked about. But I want to get your thoughts, because he's not, I guess, quote unquote, dominating the way many thought he would this year. What are you seeing when you dig in on Shane Boz?
Yeah, I'm always a little bit hesitant whenever Tampa just allows a pitcher to go away. It's like, especially a guy that they acquired from Pittsburgh, and then I feel like they kind of got the most out of him and just like, all right, we got to sell on the selling's high right now. So, I think he looks like a guy that's probably going to like replicate what he did last year. I think the strikeouts will kind of creep back up a little bit, but I just don't see like the breakout signs here. I think he's just going to be a solid, like maybe even like most, you probably lock and load him in 15s. OCs, I could see him bouncing up and off the roster or being a streamer throughout the year. I've just never really been a big Shane Boz guy. I just like every time I feel like he showed signs of like a full-on breakout, he started throwing a breaking ball more, you know, or the curveball was doing this. There was one year where it's like he started throwing the curveball a lot more at the end of the year. I was like, oh, here it is. And it just didn't ever quite materialize. So I think he's going to be solid, like probably 4 ERA average-ish Ks. You hope the team context can kind of give you some more wins. But I didn't heading into the year, wasn't really a guy I was on, didn't really see the breakout potential. And to this point so far, not really seeing that right now. And again, anytime Tampa just, you know, trades a pitcher like that, I kind of always like, maybe they get the most out of this guy and there's just not anything else to tap into.
Yeah, he has been a streamer for me on my benches right now. He's not locked in the lineup, that's for sure, because I haven't seen the full upside. He hasn't crushed me, but I don't see the full upside just yet. Most of these pitchers haven't cost you a premium. This one did. Yuri Perez, a lot of high expectations for Yuri Perez. We saw him come back last season from injury. We saw some high points there. Everyone's very optimistic on what was to come this year. Through four starts for Yuri Perez, 15 runs, 12 of them earned over 20 innings pitched, but more importantly, 11 walks and 20 Ks. And they talk about command's the last thing to return after this Tommy John surgery, all that good stuff. But what are you seeing when you see Yuri Perez, a guy that I think everyone can agree has insane talent,
yes, but
the consistency has not been there?
I see 17.2% barrel percentage and 85 location plus, 44 bot commands. I see a guy that just turned 23 years old, and oftentimes, whether it's high school pitchers or international signing guys, sometimes it takes these guys a long time to be command guys that learn how to really pitch and harness the stuff. And he's got stuff. I mean, there's no denying it. He's got the strikeout upside, and when it's right, he's as dominant as it gets. But when it's not right, it's just can unravel in a hurry. Until that command improves, I think this is kind of what you're going to have to deal with. I do think the walk rate is going to decline back to where it was, closer to where it was last year, which was 3 per 9 innings. But the command right now is just really what's getting him in trouble. And I think that's what you're seeing with the barrel rates, is that he's just, I mean, and it's everything too. I mean, it's the slider, it's the sweeper, it's the changeup, it's the cutter. I mean, fortunately, the four-seamer doesn't have a bad barrel rate, but it's got pretty hard contact as well. So I'm really bullish on Miami as a pitching development organization right now. I think they're doing a lot of great things. I think they have a lot of smart people in there. So I think they're going to try to help him get right. But sometimes too, with these young guys, you know, it takes them a while to naturally learn just how to throw strikes and command the baseball. And that just might be what we're seeing here is a 23-year-old guy that's had a major injury in his past. It's still not quite all the way there yet.
Yeah, that's fair. And also when you were describing like just the command, the, you know, the contacts, all the things you were describing there essentially, and then you factor in the age, that just echoed a former teammate of his, Edward Cabrera, to me. Like for years, we do this stuff. Command was always an issue. He'd give up the occasional long ball. As he got older, things started have slowly gotten better. They're still not great, but just reminding, because we used to think Edward Cabrera was supposed to be the next big thing, and it never really did. Yeah. I think Yuri might be more talented, but
I agree, and I think he's going to end up being, at least I think he's going to be a better command guy too. And in credit, and Miami did an awesome job with Cabrera last year. It was they changed the pitch usage because. Yep. They're like, okay, you can throw this fastball for a strike more than you can throw this fastball for a strike. Let's just throw strikes. And it kind of unlocked everything. So I'm still optimistic that Miami's going to get the most out of him. But I'm afraid that he's a guy that it might be next year for him where it's like, okay, things might really all start to come together for a guy that's still only 24 years old next year.
Another guy that's all 23 this year, Bubba Chandler. Many people were angry when he didn't get called up last year. It was okay, I guess, but what you saw. It hasn't been great so far this year. The biggest thing is the command. He's got 12 walks and 14 Ks over 14 innings pitched over his first three starts, six earned runs, two homers. He has not looked like the stud. Again, super young. Not saying he's not going to be. But is there anything we're looking at right now that leaves us optimistic this year besides, quote-unquote, pedigree?
Yeah, this is a tough one. He's a really good athlete, and – usually really good athletes don't struggle to throw strikes like he's struggling to throw strikes. And, you know, he had this issue in the minors and then he got up into pro ball at the end of the year and he had that one bad start and then he came back and I don't think he walked anybody his last three outings. I'm like, oh, there it is. There's the athlete. There's the strike throwing. This is the Bubba Chandler that we thought we were going to get. And then in spring training, I watched one of the spring training outings and I forget who I met. It might have been James Anderson I messaged because we've been big Bubba Chandler guys forever. And I was like, I'm watching him walk guys in 3-0 counts and not even be close. And I was like, something's just off. And ultimately, like, where do we go when that happens? Like, oh my God, he's hurt. Something's wrong. But like, he's throwing 100 and his stuff is still really good and he's getting a lot of strikeouts. But like, the strike throwing just was not there. So, yeah, this is a concern because there's been times where, like, when he misses, it's not by a little. And it's like guys are just got the take sign and he just can't throw the ball over the plate. But then you kind of look and it's like, well, he's got a 2.68 body RA and, like, really good pitching plus, really good stuff rating, stuff plus, all that sort of stuff. So he's a tough guy to start right now until he throws more strikes. But I'm optimistic that it's going to turn around at some point, but this is really concerning because we saw this exact same thing in spring training and it hasn't gotten any better. And the fact that, like, you're missing that bad sometimes with fastballs, maybe it's a situation where Pittsburgh needs to be like, hey dude, pull back a little bit. Like, let's try working 96, 98 instead of 99, 101 all the time and just get the fastball into the zone and work from there and get some count leverage so you can get to your other pitches. But yeah, this is pretty, it's not like sound the red alarm concerning, but it's like, hey, put this guy on your bench and let's kind of see how it goes for a little while before you fire him in there blindly all the time.
Yeah, it's the old adage. It doesn't matter how hard you can throw the ball if you can't locate it. So it doesn't matter one bit. Baltimore Orioles, Kyle Bradish, another guy that was a massive discussion point in the offseason.
I got to go, Bubba. I'm out, man. I'm sorry. I got to take off.
This is for you and Ryan Bloomfield. It's been not ideal is the best way I can say. Like, he actually looked pretty good last year when he came back from the injury. So far through four starts, 12 earned, 19 and two-thirds, 10 walks, 21 Ks. Doesn't look like he's really in the domination mode. What are we doing with Kyle Bradish right now? Or I guess, what are you doing with Kyle Bradish right now?
Yeah, he ended up being like, I was in so many leagues this year. People just drafted him ahead of me. Like, I went into some drafts like, I'm going to draft this guy like two rounds ahead of ADP, and like somebody beat me to him. Of course, you know, I talked to you guys about my main event, which has turned into a disaster so far, and how all the pitchers went ahead of me, and I was like, Brash, I'll have Brash. I'm just going to take him here. And I watched a couple of his first starts, and to me, it was like immediately obvious that his four-seam fastball was different. It looked a lot more like a cutter than it had in the past. It didn't have the same shape to it that it had in the past. You can go like in Savant page and look at the pitch plot, and it was just a different pitch, and the velocity was down a little bit. And I immediately had this like sinking feeling like, oh no, like this is not the same guy that I thought there was going to be, because I thought like at worst, I was like, okay, he's going to give me some whip. Because if you look through, what was it, 2023, 104, 2024, 107, 2025, when he came back, 103. And I was like, okay, like I'm going to get some whip. And the walk rate has gone up. The strikeout rate has gone down. He's had some pretty bad luck. 375 BABIP, 58.8 left on base percentage. I think those things are going to correct, but we're also at the point where we're four starts into this. So if you spend a premium pick on him like I did, you got to be a little concerned. I did watch his most recent start, and I thought it looked a lot more like the Kyle Bradish that we'd seen last year, the year before, and the year before that. The velocity was up. The command looked a little bit better. Didn't have great results, but I was like, okay, this kind of looks more like the Kyle Bradish I'm used to seeing. And lo and behold, the fastball rated better. All the pitching models liked everything better than they had up until that point. I was like, okay, maybe he's kind of turning a corner here. He's a guy, I wonder if we talked about the ABS. Like, I wonder if he kind of just, without even thinking about it, is being a little too fine with you know, the sinker and the four-seamer and things like that. But yeah, there's I'm concerned. I'm not as concerned as I was before last start, because it kind of looked more like Kyle Bradish again. But yeah, I'm very pessimistic that the breakout I thought, or just repeating what he did last year over a full season, I'm pessimistic that that's not going to happen this year.
Yeah, I think it might be a year away type situation, which I've kind of said all offseason. Two more here. Ryan Weathers, a guy that I do like at his price. It has not been great. He's had one really good start, one okay start, two what the heck's going on starts. Strikeouts have been there, though. Seven or more Ks and three out of four starts, but still 10 earned runs over 21 innings pitched is not ideal. So where are we at on Ryan Weathers? I was already concerned about how many innings I'd get out of him this year. So to get these early rough ones is not what I was hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, 299 Sierra, 281 xFIP, 290 body RA, 120 pitching plus was like one of the best in baseball. Location plus is up, the command's up. I still think there's a lot to like about Ryan Weathers. I still think that our biggest concern is just simply the health. I feel like that when he's missed location, he's just gotten hammered for it. But you know, you kind of look at the BABIP, 353, 20 homer for fly ball. I think that's going to go down a little bit. But if you look at a lot of the underlying stuff that typically suggests or predict the future, he rates like really, really well in those areas. So I'm still convinced that the one main issue for him is, can he stay healthy over a full season? Because he's shown some positive things so far with the Yankees. I mean, 23.3 K to walk percentage. I mean, a lot of this stuff is really, really good. It's just kind of been when the ball's put in play, it's either been hit out of the yard or it's just been kind of a little bit unlucky. So I think if you draft your Ryan Weathers, I think you can still feel pretty good about what's happening right now.
Perfect. Last one I have for you, and it's going to lead us to listener questions. His name was mentioned. I'm curious. My co-host even texted me and said he's curious. What's your thoughts on Sonny Gray, a guy that we have loved in the past? Strikeouts have been awesome the last few years. Mm-hmm. This year, it's been 10 earned runs over 20 and a third, four walks to only 11 strikeouts. The strikeouts aren't there. Last year, like, you know, everyone's like the ratios, but if you looked under the hood, like, very unlucky. I don't know. Like, I asked you earlier, is Father Time catching up to Luis Castillo? Sonny Gray's 3 years older than Luis Castillo. Is Father Time catching up to Sonny Gray?
Yeah, I don't know. The vibes around Boston just are not.
That's
good.
Very fair
right now. And I watch them and the vibes are off. I'm kind of wondering what's happening on like the pitching development side, which was supposed to be a major strength for those guys. And Garrett Crochet hasn't been Garrett Crochet so far. You know, Brian Bayo's made a lot of changes, but it hasn't played out in surface results yet. Ron Hurst-Swart has finally had a good start. But with Gray, yeah, I like the whiffs are way down, the called strikes are way down. The four seamer is a different shape. It's just besides the sweeper, which has been successful in the past, there's not really anything to kind of like hang your hat on. And it's just like whatever Boston's doing with him right now just isn't working. And I kind of wonder if that's more of a Boston thing than it is a Sonny Gray thing. Like he's throwing the cutter more so far, pulling back on the four seamer a little bit. Yeah, I still think that he's going to be fine long term. But if you're concerned about him, I can't talk you out of not being concerned about him. And part of that's him, part of that's age. Part of it really is just what's going on in Boston right now. There's just not many positive things happening on the pitching side, on the hitting side, on any side right now. And you know, when a pitcher goes from an organization to another. And granted, he's been a guy that's been a self-tinkerer, corrector forever. Like, I don't know how much a pitching coach is going to mess with him, but I just think there's some things happening right now with all their pitchers that are just kind of like, it doesn't seem like they're getting the most out of their guys right now. And the four-seamer is undoubtedly much different than it was last year.
Yep, no, I agree. I'm holding tight, but don't feel
good. Yeah, you got to hold. Yeah.
But definitely not an auto start these days.
Yeah. You're looking for a guy that can give you a start. It's like, okay, that kind of looks like Sonny Gray again.
All right, let's run through some listener questions before we head out of here. I've covered a lot of pitchers. We'll cover a few more. But in the YouTube here, Steven says, would you drop Shane Boz for either Mick Abel or Spencer Arrighetti? I'm assuming this is an 10 to 12 team league because in 15s, no.
yeah. Aaron Gaudi might be on the wire just because he just made his first start. That's a tough question. You know, Mick Abel is almost like Spider-Man meme for Taj Bradley. We talked 100%. Earlier in that, like, it's just the fly balls. Like he's giving up a lot of fly balls and they're not flying out of the yard yet. And he's been a guy that in the past it's been his command. That's been the big question. And I think that like, it's kind of like Boz, I think is going to throw strikes. Arrighetti and Abel are probably gonna get you strikeouts, but they might really hurt your whip as well. So I probably wouldn't. I would probably hang tight on Boz. I feel like he's a little bit of a safer option than either two of those other two guys because I think they're kind of more of a boomer bust type of guy. Get you some strikeouts, but might get you some blowups and a bad whip as well.
Yep, I'm a big Arrighetti fan, but he will walk the farm from time to time. So mm-hmm. I would still stick to Shane Boz, but I'm not opposed to getting some Spencer Arrighetti in your life.
Yeah.
From the Discord, Kenton Dog says, any concerns with, or should we have with Garrett Crochet, or is this a one-time blow-up? I'm not too concerned, but are you?
I'm not too concerned other than, like, you spend a premium pick on this guy if you took him. So you want an ace to be an ace. And his spring training was not good. His spring training in 2025 was about as dominant of a spring training as a guy could have. And he carried it into the regular season, the playoffs, and he was phenomenal. His spring training this year was just didn't get whiffs, didn't throw strikes, was constantly talking about his command. He was frustrated. You know, the velocity is kind of similar. It's not like, I know some people are like, oh, it's like way down. If you look at it, it's not really down that much. But I think it's a command deal and he's just not getting the swinging strikes he got last year. So, I think it'll sort itself out eventually, but, you know, this isn't just like one start kind of a deal. This is like, since he got to spring training kind of a deal, he's been talking about how frustrated he is. So, he's got to turn the corner here and start showing the ace-like tendencies that you drafted him for. Otherwise, he kind of might fall back from the Scooble Skeens pack and kind of be more of a strong, like second-tier SP1 kind of a guy. But don't panic right now, but you want to see him get back on the horse this next start and dominate.
Yep, totally with you. You're not doing much about it, but just hang on. Smokey Joe said he drafted Landon Roop a lot. Thought at least I could start him at home and sneaky K potential. Do you think he is more than a streamer now? Another great start in Cincinnati today.
Yes, he did. I think that he's more of what he was last year. And, you know, last year was probably more of a streamer, so maybe he's a guy that can be more of that this year. And, you know, the pitch mix changed a little bit. Just not just leaning as heavily totally on the sinker and the curveball. Change up a little bit more, cutter a little bit more. Looks like he's introduced a little bit of a four-seamer too. So I think you feel pretty dang good about, you know, if you draft a bunch of Landon Roop at his price point, I think there is a path to him being a little bit more than a streamer just based on what he's shown so far. So, yeah, a guy that I'd still would peek at the matchups, especially the left-right splits. You know, those teams that are really good with a bunch of lefty bats, I think I'd be a little bit more leery about starting him just because of the arsenal. But I think he's showing that there might be another step up from where he was last year, which is really just being a better whip and strikeout guy than he was last year.
Totally agree. I think he's definitely improved. There was high expectations last year. Injuries kind of halted that. So we're seeing it this year. Dr. Doom says, should we be lowering our win projections for the Blue Jays pitchers? That's like a tongue-in-cheek one for you there.
They've already lowered themselves.
Yes. JM10000, we already talked Sonny Gray. He says he drafted a fair amount of Simeon Woods Richardson this year, mostly because he was throwing a new splitter at the end of last year and was effective. Is there any hope he isn't trash, or should I move on? I already moved on.
You need to move on. Yeah, it's and he was right on. Like, that's – I think we all – not all, but a lot of us saw, hey, what's going on here with the splitter, and – and you kind of, like, even under the hood, like, you kind of look at a lot of the metrics. Overall, he started to rate really well, too. And I had him in an auction. I think I got him for $1. And I watched his first start, and I was like, oh, no. And I kept watching him, and I was like, no, this is not the same guy. So I cut him loose. I think you need to cut him loose in all formats. He is just not the same guy he was Dan last year.
I think Moose has another tongue-in-cheek one. Same question as he had for us last season on me and Ryan. He says, any secret on knowing when and if to start Jesus Luzardo? Yeah, it's a mess.
Stuff's talk so about good. I can't remember the last time I saw a guy with his peripherals have the ERA that he has.
He's,
so
it's the best peripherals he's ever had in his career.
I know. I don't know if it's like a tipping thing again, because like the home run rate is astronomical. But it's like, yeah. So I don't know. That's how I felt with Jose Soriano last year. It's like, I think I got every bad Jose Soriano start and missed all the good ones. Now they're all good, and I don't have him on any teams. But no, you just got to keep firing away Jesus Luzardo and hope it corrects real quick.
Yeah. Martin Sikulski says, he's curious about Andrew Abbott. For a while last season, I doubted the skills, but he kept performing, and his underlying metrics weren't drastically different from his expected. This season, both actual and expected are bad. Thoughts? I've always thought he was bad, but
yeah, he's a really prime example of, he does a lot of things that the models don't catch. He's a crossfire guy. He's a really good command guy. And he just creates a lot of angles that hitters have a lot of problems with. It's like, it doesn't make sense until you kind of watch him and somebody points like, hey, see where he lands and see how the angles and how he's closed and where the ball is coming from. And it's like, you start to kind of put the pieces together. And it's like, yeah, it's like really tough to pick up. And then he's throwing all these pitches for strikes where he wants to. But he's another guy that had a very up and down spring training where the command just was not quite the same. And I think you're seeing that in the walk rate. 353 BABIP has been unlucky. He's actually getting more ground balls than he had. He used to be one of those guys that just gets a lot of weak fly balls and a lot of pop-ups, which always helped his ERA and stuff like that. But he's just not been the same guy so far. So I think that in the long run, he's going to be more of what he was in 2023 and 2024 than the 287 ERA he was last year. But he's following a kind of an odd spring training with a not great start to the year. Although I feel like that's just been one bad start that's kind of pulling everything down right now.
Agreed. He's going to have, it's a roller coaster with him, because on paper he should get hit a lot worse than he does, but he figures ways to make it happen. Adam W, we kind of hit on it, but I just want to recap real quick. Should we be bailing on Cade Cavalli even in 15? So this is his question.
I probably would. Yeah. I know if you invested in him, you invested thinking that there's going to be a breakout coming there, but I'm just not seeing it. And, you know, especially if there's anything decent on the wire, might be trying to grab that and see if you can get some more out of it. So, yeah, I would probably be cutting them loose in 15s.
Free Cooper Union says, thoughts on Kodai Senga in 15-teamers. How concerned are you with the velo drop? Is this just a speed bump or a middle of the rotation starting pitcher?
It's a good question. Based on his past, it might be a little bit more than a speed bump. That's not to say he can't be a guy that provides you some value during the year, because, you know, he did come out gangbusters, and, you know, the velocity in spring training, his first start was really impressive. So I would watch him very closely to see if it was a speed bump or if there's some like major issues there, because, you know, right now the batted ball quality he's given up and things like that is not really good. And maybe the velocity kind of was dipping as he's trying to find a strike zone more or something like that. But I'd keep a close eye on him, because given his injury past, I think that's always going to be a little bit lingering concern that things just might fall apart pretty quick.
Yep, totally agree. I like the idea of Kodai Senga. Last year taught me to stay away from that idea. Adam Brunchen, the good Waka, did he change something? He's always steady, but not a stud. Seems pretty stained to me, but just steady.
Yeah, that's a good question. I watched him, one of his Team USA World Baseball Classic outings. I was like, man, he is just mowing guys down, and he's definitely getting a lot more whiffs than he has in the past. And strangely enough, he's getting a lot more on the four seamer. It used to just be the changeup and the slider would kind of carry him in that regard. But even the cutter is getting some too, and he's throwing the cutter more often. So I wonder if maybe just a different mix of pitches has just kind of helped him, you know, be a little bit more diverse and less predictable than he had been in the past. You know, sinker, he's throwing it more. Like he's kind of adopting more of the, I'm going to throw three different fastballs kind of approach than he had in the past. So there could be a little something here that he might end up being more than the I beat the pitch models with my ratios kind of a guy. Like he might actually have some upside from what he's showing so far. So a guy I just was kind of out of sight, out of mind for me in draft season. And then I saw him with Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. Like, he looks better than he has in the past, and it's kind of played out so far. So I think definitely there's an avenue here that he returns some nice value for. He picked him this year.
All right, two more for you. Diversio says, Keiter Montero, thoughts, any changes that have caught your eye? Another good start on Tuesday. It's been four and runs over 16 and a third with 15 strikeouts and two walks.
Yeah, and I think the news here too is Verlander is really slowed his recovery. And yep. As somebody who made the mistake of starting Verlander for his first start, I was watching that and I was like, this is the worst stuff in Major League Baseball. It was bad. Like it was the hacks the Diamondbacks were taking. And I was like, oh my gosh, these guys are swinging like it's beer league softball. Like it's meatballs every single pitch. And I was like, please let him not get a second start. So I didn't want him to be hurt. I wanted to rain out to push it to the next week, and I cut him loose. Montero has looked really legit, and I'm kicking myself for not just going after him a little bit more aggressively. But I thought that like he just was going to have a spot start and probably go to a bullpen or go back down or something like that. So I don't know if anything's like really changed. I just think he's just getting better results so far. Like, the swing and strike rate, the CSW and things like that are all pretty similar. The pitches are all pretty similar. But, and this is a guy we had a lot of interest in last year for various points of the season. So I think if you've got him, hold him. I would love to have him in a 15 right now. Good park, good team behind him, you know, and he's getting good results right now.
Yeah, it was the potential spot start that scared me off of him. And that's obviously, yeah, what you said, not feeling great. Last one we got, it's more of a strategy question for you. Ben Bingham says, what are you looking at to decide starting pitcher sit starts for the fringy guys? Like, what factors from this season do you put stock in at this point to help you with those decisions? Really good question.
Yeah, great question. It's kind of a little of a lot of things. And one thing I'm kind of a little bit more conscious to pay attention to this year is whether the guys are at home or on the road. And part of the reason why is if you look at betting models and pitching models and projections and things like that, it's obvious that pitching at home matters. It gives you a better chance at a win. It just makes you a more valuable pitcher as compared to if you had that start at a neutral place. So I sometimes use that as a tiebreaker. I look a lot at like left-right splits because, you know, Major League Baseball now, these teams are trying as best they can to get the platoon advantage as much as they can. So, you know, are you facing a team that's got a bunch of lefty hitters with your right-handed pitcher? How does he perform against lefties? Are you having a righty that's facing a team, or excuse me, do you have a lefty and he's facing a team that really struggles against lefties? Didn't work with Yusei Kikuchi when the Yankees had a 24 WRC plus, but typically lefties can kind of outperform because there's a lot of teams in Major League Baseball that just don't hit lefties very well. But some of it's like, where are they pitching home and away? You look at left-right splits. How does your pitcher do in the splits? How does the team he's facing do in the splits? And a lot of time, too, is just kind of like, how are these guys performing lately? You know, like, are they in a groove? Are they throwing strikes? Are they getting results? Is the team they're playing in a funk? Like, the Mets have been in a gigantic funk, and it's kind of playing. And I feel like teams are kind of like perpetually in that funk until they snap out of it. And that might last 2 weeks. You know, you can kind of capitalize on an offense just being cold, like paying attention to other teams' lineups. Do they have injuries? You know, like the Blue Jays lineup right now is different than the Blue Jays lineup there was of the season. They don't have Addison Barger. They don't have George Springer. They're kind of scuffled a little bit. So just keeping track of kind of the most recent trends from like a team offense perspective and your own pitcher perspective, the left-right splits, and then home and away, and like how are these guys performing in their recent starts?
Yeah, no, it's a little bit of a lot. Like you said that, it's so true. Like when I do it, yeah, I look at like, you know, projections, I look at matchups, you look at so many factors to it. But in the end, it's kind of, you know, how are they throwing right now is sometimes the deciding factor when all things are said and done. Because we talked about a lot of guys that aren't throwing well, but we think are good, but which one are we going to use? Like, so.
Right. And also, too, I know a lot of people look at projections, and I would say to, like, when you're looking at projection, know what you're looking at. A lot of times these projections are going to assign values to players for that week. It's like, how does this pitcher rate value-wise relative to every pitcher that's going to throw this week? True. And you need to kind of look and see, okay, he might look to be a valuable pitcher this week, and oftentimes it's because he has two starts or whatever it is, but just make sure you're looking at the projected ratios for that pitcher. You know, it might be, hey, this guy's SP 30 this week, and it's like, oh, wait a minute, he's projected to have a 4.4 ERA and a 1.3 whip, but he's going to get maybe a strikeout more than everybody else and maybe have a better shot of the win. That kind of boosts his rating, where he has two starts. So just kind of know what you're looking at from a projection side and kind of understand why a guy might have the value that he has. And that's not the whole season and like his skill as a pitcher. It's just how he rates for everybody that week.
That's a great point also about the whole projection thing, because a lot of us don't always analyze that properly. So very good point there as well. And on that note, we'll wrap it up, man. I kept you long enough. We talked about a lot of pitchers there, a lot of great chatter. Appreciate you as always. And any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, I've talked about pitchers so much. I think I'm going to go look at my ratios and probably throw up or grab a beer or one or two. So I know it's been frustrating for so many people out there. And yeah, it's tough. I mean, you just got to try to keep making the best possible decisions you think you can make and kind of diving into stuff and, you know, trusting your research and hope things turn around. So just know if you're struggling ratios, you're not alone. It's just funny. I was looking at my main event disaster, which finally got under 5 ERA, and then Pete Fairbanks came in the eighth and gave it 3 runs. And then I look at my DCCLQ where like I've got like Braxton Ashcraft and Foster Griffin and Uvalde and Wu and Skubal and Will Warren and Emerson Hancock. It's like, how could this team be so good at pitching and this other team be so bad at pitching? But so just know if you're struggling, a lot of people are struggling, and hopefully things kind of correct themselves, get back to normal soon.
Full agree. Long ways to go. Hopefully things change sooner rather than later. But if you aren't already, make sure you follow Dustin on Twitter at Dustin L. McComas. I got to see he was tweeting out the walk stuff today with the ABS and always some good tidbits out there. But as always, man, thanks for joining me. Always enjoy chatting with you.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Bubba. You guys do amazing work, man. I listen to you guys all the time, every week in the Patreon tools. I've got those tabs open at all times. So you guys are crushing it. You got a great thing going with the Discord and stuff like that. So keep up the great work, and thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you, man. We'll chat again sooner than later, everybody. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 847. Catch y'all next time.